Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Chris, who is a longtime dedicated member of the Sangha and thus a veteran of email classes, and has agreed to be with us tonight to talk about that very topic since we have an email class starting in just a few days. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I wonder, Chris, given that there could be folks on the call who are not used to what an email class is and the format and that kind of thing, I thought we might start with that, just a little explanation of how an email class works.
Sounds great. The first thing that happens is an introductory email comes out, which spells out exactly how the class will work. So it creates an environment that makes it really easy for everybody to be successful and includes really great directions on exactly how it's all going to work, and then also has some real handy reminders that you can't get behind in the class and can't do it wrong, just things like that that I know for myself when I get that email, it just puts me right at ease and in that place where I'm ready to go when that first class shows up, which usually happens a day or so later, I think, if it's anything like the last one was. And then there'll be an assignment that comes out, an awareness type, look at some aspect of your life or experience and see what you see. And that'll be the assignment they come out two times a week. And the last one was on Tuesdays and Fridays. And then for me, I read that class assignment, and then I start to look to see what comes up. And at some point, as things arise, then I'll sit down and write an email in reply back to the email address for the class. And then all of those responses from everyone in the class are all compiled and all the names are taken out, so that when Sherry gets that long list of, or however long that list is, of emails from people and their responses, they're completely anonymous. And then she takes the time to respond to every one of them, which is really quite fabulous and incredible in and of itself. And that's kind of the basic format. And so there's a focus, like a practice focus for me for a couple of days. And then the next email class comes out, and we go through that process again. And then actually once Sherry responds to the emails, then a link is sent out to everyone in the class that indicates if you click on that link, then it'll take you to the website page on Living Compassion's website that has all the responses. So essentially I can read the responses from all the participants in the class, as well as my own response, and then any responses that Sherry's had to those emails as well.
Oh, that was a fabulous description. Thank you, Chris. Very, very thorough. Thanks for that. One of the things I loved in what you were saying was how the instructions make it so that we can be successful, and that's really, really true. There really isn't any way to do it wrong. The quote that just came up was a T-shirt we have. It does not matter how slowly you go, as long as you do not stop. It's phenomenal what Sherry accomplishes in those classes, the amount of responses that come through, and how she responds, as you said, to every single one. And then we as participants, however much time you have, that's how many of the responses you can read. The more you can read, the better, because in my experience, they're so varied. And by reading as many as you can, you get so many different perspectives on whatever topic we're talking about. And so often people write in about things that I completely resonate with but hadn't thought of myself. So it's really, really quite amazing to have that practice of being able to read all those responses. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your experience of taking the class and kind of what that adds to your practice.
Yeah, you bet. So sometimes when a class comes out, I'll know exactly where or how I want to respond. And that's a fun experience in and of itself. And And then the next piece of it for me would be finding the language to describe that in, to send back in. And usually when I do that, I'll get a bunch of additional insights that drop in. I might see, oh, wow, this is related to that, and this is like that. And the nature of my response might even change dramatically from the first time I sit down to start doing the typing to when I actually send it in. So that's one experience. So the, another one is, I don't know. And this would be really good to just keep on the side of my awareness during the course of the day to see what comes up. And I know the topic for this next one is resistance. It probably won't be long before I have some material to work with and some direct experience that I can be examining in terms of what the class was suggesting and then waiting for a response or reply to come out of that. So for me, it's just a really great practice focus, and it's really specific. So it assists me in probably digging a little deeper than I might ordinarily on my own, which is really great.
Yeah, and I really appreciated the practice of making it 50 words or fewer, which, A, really makes reading the responses a lot more manageable, but also I think, as you were saying, how you go about doing your response, creating your response, I really saw in that how I know for me it's been a great practice to, you know, so I'm seeing all these different things, and maybe I write that out. It could be a page long. All right, here we go, 50 words or fewer. And that's a really good point, that in that process, distilling it down, I really continue the process of looking inside, looking inward, in a sense, to my own guidance. What do I see about that? And then distilling it down to 50 words or less, and then getting the feedback of the guide is just so great.
Yeah, me too. And another piece of that comes in is in reading the responses. The wisdom and the kindness and the willingness of all the other participants is, in my experience, just really extraordinary. And there is a bunch to be learned from what everybody else is seeing in all of this. Again, it just really broadens everything out, you know, way beyond what I might just stumble across in my own practice in the course of a day. I don't want to downplay the importance of doing my own practice, but boy, with Sangha, it's quite grand, and the multiplier effect comes into account there too.
Yeah, that's great. I just had this image as you were saying that. I think the last class had something like 600 people. I don't know, a lot of people, hundreds and hundreds of people are in these classes. And yes, we're each doing our own practice diligently every day, and there's no way we could have the insights of 600 people. But to have all of those hundreds of people distilling their insights down to 50 words or fewer and offering them as a gift to everyone else is just so great. And I'm with you. I'm really excited about the resistance topic and to consider how coming at resistance from hundreds of different angles, it's like it doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah. It's bound to be very cool. So, see, there's one other thing. Also, the classes are available on the web after the email class. So I know there are times when I've been away for a week during the course of an email class and really haven't given it the kind of attention that I would like to, either in doing the classes or responding. And after the class is over, of course, there's no more responses or no more responses are answered. But I can certainly do the exercise and then read through the responses that are on the web. So it's just a no-lose situation in that direction.
I've heard people talk about going back and redoing a class, you know, one that was really beneficial to them and just really walking back through it, even doing the exercises and reading all the responses and that sort of thing. So that's thanks for that reminder, because it's always there. It's a book in a way. It's available to us. It's published once it's finished. So great point. So Chris, anything else before we finish up?
There was something else. I think it's escaped me at this point. So
Great. Well, you'll write in about it, I'm sure, to the class. When it... All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll turn it over to you, Michael.
Greg, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Here we are.
Are you enjoying the rain?
Yes. Yes.
It's wonderful.
It's changed, and I'm grateful for running water and clean drinking water. And so I know that's part of that.
Yes. Yes. And if none ever comes down from the sky, sooner or later, it's bound not to go well for us.
Yes.
We can be very happy that we're finally getting some of that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I have some announcements here.
Okay.
Registration is now open for two fabulous retreats. What you practice is what you have. That's April 21st through 28th, transformative retreat like no other, and this is created especially for graduates of any of the It's Time to Feel Good email classes.
Yes, and something I always want to remember to say when I hear that being mentioned is that that is a wonderful retreat to repeat. Most of them we could say that about. And we always encourage people to do There's Nothing Wrong With You Again after a while, after your practice is settled. And for people who have done a lot of practice and, you know, want to have that kind of all-encompassing, oh, yeah, that's what we're doing experience, I think there's nothing like that. What you practice is what you have.
That was my experience. Absolutely. Also coming up in May, there will be two There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats. This is an extraordinary retreat that will change your life. And if you want more compassion in your life, this one is highly recommended.
Hard to imagine saying to oneself, no.
I'm kind of full of
compassion.
I have enough
compassion, really. No, I think I'll work on something else.
Yes, yes. And find out more, you can go to livingcompassion.org and click to the retreats from the homepage there. And a couple of reminders that tomorrow, Wednesday, is the last day to sign up for the new email class with Sherry.
Gosh, so after that conversation with Chris and Jen, I'm getting excited about that thing.
Yes, me too. And if you've been resistant at all, this might be a good time to sign up or a good topic.
Yeah, in fact, if you've been resisting anything, right? Because we know about resisting practice. We've heard people talk about that plenty, ourselves included. But just resistance. You know, we just resistance is such a prevalent experience in people's lives and not all that well understood. So I'm hoping that by the time this is over, there's a whole lot more clarity about what exactly resistance is and why it's so important that we realize what it is and begin to have a different relationship with it.
Yes. And I love how you frame it, because it's not getting past resistance or pushing through it or, you know, really understanding what it is and how it works.
Yes. Yes. Because... Once we get that, then the path is clear, right?
Yes.
Until then, we're really, sadly, in the hands of resistance, trying to figure out how to fight resistance. Bad place to be.
Yes. Yes. And the last reminder is that the new quarter of Reflective Listening Buddies begins April 15th. And the sign-up is by March 25th.
Finally, something good about April 15th, huh?
Yes. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic in about 5 minutes.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Rebecca.
Hello, Rebecca.
Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, that resistance email class is just coming in the nick of time. I've got some resistance going on, but I'm seeing it, and that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit today. So part of my plan, my practice plan, is around finding ways that light me up that bring more money into my life. And what I keep hitting up against is being the fear of losing my health benefits. You know, if I get to a point where I can support myself without being employed, it's not even the money, it's the health insurance.
Uh-huh.
And
boy, they have done a number on Americans, haven't they?
Yes,
I mean, people will put up with anything if it comes with health benefits.
That is so true.
You know, truly, it's the epitome of the whole, oh my God, something awful is going to happen. And,
yeah.
And you'd better have insurance. Or,
well, and the irony of it is that most insurance is just terrible in the first place. You know, it doesn't even really, you know, if it was kind of health insurance, health care that I even speak, you know, most of the time and paid for it all, you know, then it might be a little bit different, but it's not even good.
Yes, but it is expensive.
Yes, it is that. So what I'm seeing about it is that it's a part of a larger practice question or practice place for me of taking 100% responsibility for my body and for my health. And, you know, I've been looking and practicing a lot with eating and food and exercise and all of that kind of stuff. And this seems to be the next big, edge.
Yes.
To be looking at.
The next place where conditioning can do the, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
This is something really real, and you have to be afraid of it, and you have to be kept in bondage because you have to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be kept in bondage.
It gets
circular after a while.
It is.
Yeah, and it is perfect. It's just perfect on every level. You know, we have a different approach to Zen practice than a lot of folks who are doing Zen practice. Like, I think probably everybody who's doing Zen practice has a little different approach to Zen practice, because that's how we are as human beings. But the point that I want to make is that it has long been understood as something that people do because they know they're going to die. Now,
Zen practices.
Now, that doesn't mean you wait until you're pretty sure you're going to die to practice. What it means is, I know full well how this is going to end up. I want to live my life in such a way that I'm going to be ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it's about. We are going for a place of being at peace with everything. So the fiendish part of what's been done, particularly with the American culture, with medical care and insurance and that sort of thing, is that people hold or are willing to sort of be lulled into a belief that if you have insurance, you're going to be all right.
Gosh, yeah.
Okay, if you can get good medical care, nothing's going to happen to you. I just received a letter from somebody in the Sangha who was talking about a process that her mother had just gone through, where ending up in an attempted suicide because she was on like her fifth surgery to correct a back problem that then they messed up her neck fixing the back. Then they messed up the back attempting to fix the neck. And finally, when she was to the point where she could not bend over or open or close her hands, she said, I don't want to be here anymore.
Oh, my God.
Now, that's not the picture that we're given of medical care, but it's not an unusual picture.
No, no.
So all of us know plenty of stories of of how it went wrong. So if we live our lives hoping that there's somebody out there who has the wherewithal to save us, then to me, we're just, you know, we're walking down a fool's path. And it's not that good Zen fool path.
Right, right. It's a delusional fool's path.
That's right. And so to get to the point of willingness to confront the fear of this, to me, is the essential piece of it. Then have health insurance, don't have health insurance, decide what you want to do. But you're not making your choices out of fear. That's the bottom line essential.
Yeah. Yeah, and the kindness in this for me is that right now it's only myself. It's only my health insurance that I'm questioning. So my kids are covered on a different, you know, policy and stuff, so it wouldn't be affected. Because, man, if I had to make this for myself and for my children, it just would be maybe too much at once. So it's really good that I get to look at it for myself first.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, at the risk of sounding a little on the left wing side, you know, this is such a privileged people's problem.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, most of the world gets sick and dies.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to be very sick from very much. It's just, you know, medical care is not an option, let alone the kinds of things that are just assumed for privileged Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I develop some sort of terminal condition, then it's expected that I will fight it down to the last whatever, no matter how many hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars it costs to take me in this miserable direction to my inevitable death.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and for me, it's not even the moment of, it's not the getting sick and it's not the death that is where the fear lies. It's the in between. It's the slow decline. You know, actually, it's the fear of wanting to die and not being able to. Like, you know, like what the story you just said was, is that's my worst nightmare. It's like, I want to go and my, you know, my poor aching, unhealthy, painful body just is suffering, you know. So
here we are, Rebecca. There are so many aspects of practice in this. One, this is your best opportunity to find out how to be with someone in unconditional love and acceptance no matter what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would project that you, like an awful lot of us folks, have always wanted to be unconditionally loved, to be secure in the knowledge that no matter what happens, there's somebody who's going to be there with you to understand and take care of you and not judge and be kind and do whatever. Okay? You have the opportunity to become that person. Right? The assumption that we are victims is so deeply ingrained into egocentric karmic conditioning. There's nothing to say. You know, Zen, you know, the old guys, the old folks in centuries long ago. The tradition was that you send out a postcard to everybody saying, I'm going to leave my body on June 19th. Okay? And then everybody gathers around and you give your last poem and fall over dead.
Oh.
So it's the assumption that we don't have the ability to choose our life experience at that level is something that really needs to be questioned.
Wow. Yeah. See, I know I should read more old Zen stories like that. That's fascinating to me. And, you know, as you were talking, I could feel myself move from disidentify from the fear victim place into the, yeah, I could learn how to love unconditionally this person. That would be, you know, I could feel myself moving into the realm of possibility.
It's so exciting. You know, we're alive. It's extraordinary. Yeah. We are alive. We have from 0 to 100 in the be alive range, and people want to get at about 22 and then just hunker down and wait it out until they die, hoping that nothing bad ever happens to them. And, of course, again, that's the worst that can happen to a person. Mm-hmm. And what's not happening to a person is the extraordinary opportunity of living at least 100, not 100, at 100.
Okay, that's great. I mean, so I know this place now. You know, I mean, I knew it before, but I'm in this place now, and it's great. And I can see that that's the practice, is noticing how it's going to pull me back into the, yeah, but what if, you know, kind of business, and then just keep practicing dropping it.
Yes. You know, I'll tell you one other thing before I let you go, and that is that I didn't have health insurance for my entire life. And some of the most extraordinary experiences I had with other human beings were receiving health care when I didn't have insurance.
Mm.
People's generosity, their kindness. First of all, of course, in many, many situations, they had no idea what to do. They just had no idea. I didn't have any money, and I didn't have any insurance. And yet I seemed to be this really nice sort of together person.
Mm-hmm.
And the places that they would go to make things happen for me were breathtaking.
Oh, that's
I would have never had those experiences if I'd walked in there with an insurance card.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's very heartening.
So we just don't know what life is going to offer us if we open up to life and let go of that belief that we need to be in charge. We need to be in control in order to be all right. Being in control is as not all right as we can get, and being out of control, when it's a matter of turning the control for our lives over to life, which it always is anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Point that out. But to acknowledge it, to make that... to turn it over freely, consciously, is so relaxing.
And joyful. Wow. 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 Thank you. This is wonderful. Beautiful.
You got your work cut out for you. Huh?
I do, but I'm starting now in this really open place. I love it.
Good. All right. Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, you too. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, that was fascinating.
we get talked into accepting so much stuff that is just really not worth accepting.
Yes.
Necessary.
Yeah.
It just brings grief. And, of course, the story is it's going to take care of us. It's going to make us all right, make us feel better, make us safe, make us secure. It just makes us miserable. You know, can you imagine if you live all of your life in fear of this awful thing that's going to happen to you, that you need to stay in this job that you hate so that you can have this health insurance so you'll be all right, and you die at 102 never having had any serious illness in your life.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about dying with bitterness.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Paula.
Hey, Paula.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm actually Doing very, very well. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Good.
I was just so into what the previous speaker was saying, and it definitely relates somewhat to what I wanted to report. What I wanted to say is just how powerful I realize that Sangha is, and I realize the last time I talked with you, I talked with you about my mom's health, she was very, very, very sick at that time, and I just wanted to say, you know, she actually passed 9 days after our last conversation, and I really, in my own experience, I really sensed that the compassion of Sangha really aided her ability to release and let go. And I don't know whether, you know, of course I know that's probably projection, but it seemed to me that there's a lot of power in just the compassion of a lot of people who I felt very supported by.
Good.
And I feel like it was, it seemed to me that the misery my mom was experiencing had a lot to do with her ability to drop a body that wasn't working for her, and that she was aware of that and very frustrated with that situation. But nonetheless,
it's interesting. So the body's not working. She feels like it's time to go, and she can't.
Yes, that's my perception.
Yeah,
that was my perception.
And I've actually looked at that a lot, and speculated in this way, that it's really kind of a great system. Of course, everybody's karma is so different. So, you know, people die obviously in all kinds of ways. But it's kind of amazing how life arranges it so that, like with your mother, you know, she lives her whole life, she gets to this point, and she has this kind of period at the end where she can be really finished with being here.
Yes.
You know, if it kind of, I think about, you know, if I have a lingering illness and I know I'm going to die, but I don't feel bad. You know, I don't feel sick. I don't feel, I feel fine. I think that would be a very difficult transition. But to get to the place of, you know, I can't do the things I used to do. I don't enjoy what I used to enjoy. My body doesn't feel the way I want my body to feel. It's pain, it's discomfort, whatever it is. I'm ready. I'm ready to be out of here. I'm finished.
Yeah.
It's kind of again, I think we have to do a lot of practicing to be ready to take advantage of something like that. But it's not a bad system.
I guess not. I mean, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but it makes sense. I guess what I was in is that I'm witness to what appeared, you know, like great suffering.
Yes.
When I was talking to my mom. So, and that was like how, you know, it's like, why can't she just, you know, why can't death just come? Because it's just so horrible to watch her, you know, so seems so miserable. But you know, I don't think I'm I guess I'd like to understand it, but I don't expect to have a complete understanding of it. I just am doing the best I can to accept it. And it's been a huge opportunity for me in the last, going on, I guess it's been about 10 or 11 weeks. And it's been an opportunity for me to practice my own, letting go.
Yes.
And releasing
yes.
a lot of things.
Yes.
So that's what I've been paying a lot of attention to, and really my experience has been it's been very much of a healing time, and growing, for lack of a better language or word for it, I feel like it's really it's continue to grow my awareness.
Yes. Yes. And so you're being able to take advantage of that spiritual lesson that you participated in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't get too much into the whys and wherefores of things either. But I do.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again, Sherry?
I'm not interested in figuring out anything I can believe in, but I do speculate a lot. And I speculate about things like that, we don't know what our relationships with people are, who's working out what, that in this case, there's your mother living her life and obviously living it with you, but it's her life and your life is your life, and there's
yeah.
that relationship, and you're watching how she does things, and we don't know that how she went through that final transition wasn't one of her great gifts to you.
Yes, and that's my experience too, is that I also do speculate a lot, and as best I can, I try to be aware when I'm
yes.
formulating a whole new belief system that is not going to serve me at
right.
all.
No,
it's
one of those I don't know, and so if
yeah.
I'm going to put a spin on this, and somebody's going to probably, then I would just prefer to think. That was one more gift my mother gave me, and to take advantage of it, be grateful for it.
Yes. So, anyway, I don't want to take any more time other than to say I'm really also looking forward to the next email class, and the resistance is, I'm very aware of it. It comes up over and over, and it's come up several times since I signed up for reflective listening, which is I'm very resistant to.
Well,
and I've done it 3 times before, but it's always there's this little piece in there where I conditioning just kicks right in and says, this is going to, be challenging for you. So I'm excited about the email class, because I find them so incredibly helpful that ever since I became aware of your email classes, I don't think I've missed one, and that they've mm-hmm. all been, it's like I always look forward to them. So thank you so much for offering that.
You're welcome. Yeah. Well, it's great to talk with you, and I'm glad that you're doing well. And
thank you.
Practicing with life.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Bye
Good
for
night.
Now.
Thanks for joining us, Paula. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okay. Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. and you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Talk Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving on.
You are unmuted.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Certainly. Good evening. It's Eric from Alberta. The man who couldn't hear the voices, I believe, is how I'm now known.
That's right.
Although I hear them now.
Known far and wide, and now you can hear them.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So I was last on the show February 7th, and I was just following up from a 30-day retreat, and it's a quick, success report. I don't really have a question, but just some things that helped me so much from the call. I thought I'd share that with you if you would like.
I love success.
Yeah. My quests were mostly failed, about 50%, but the process was wonderful. So I was on the show, and we had talked a bit, and you suggested I do the 30-day retreat that's in your book, Making a Change for the Good. So I did that. I added two good habits and dropped two bad habits and worked on that through it. I got off immediately behind by about 3 or 4 days and was determined to catch up. And just looking back at some of my notes that I had written at the time, it was just – one of the things that came to me was practice was like drinking water. You just don't do it all in the morning. So I started interrupting my day to do my things and come back to it so I didn't get sort of taken up by the daily routines that the voices get you into. A big key for me on the show that I listened over and over was after all my trialing and failing and all the reading and studying and practice that I'd done, you came along and you just unlocked the door when you said, you know, I think you're doing the right things. I'm really happy for you. And it was kind of like if you're going to the gym lifting weights and you're just not getting anywhere, and the biggest guy in the gym comes along and says, keep it up, it'll take you a year. And you go, oh, okay. And you suddenly can see that you have progress, but you can't when you're there each day.
Yes. Especially when you're there each day and voices of conditioning are assessing your performance.
That's right. And, you know, if you don't hear the voices and you get yourself sidetracked, you go, well, I'll try this, I'll try that. If someone says, no, you're doing the right thing, just keep doing more of it, away you go.
Yes.
So I added more meditation time. My sister gave me a lovely gift of a Zafu. Because she said, well, if you're going to do all that, and I put back the yoga and I encouraged my journaling. So there's the short of it. I guess the other thing to tell you was one of the keys that began all this going was the course in November called Time to Feel Good.
Yes.
So that was an amazing transformative period for me. It seemed so simple. So I've talked about that so much. I believe there's another course coming up that my sister signed up for. She was quite interested.
Starts on Friday, Resistance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked at that and immediately said, I don't suffer from that, and then immediately always went and signed up. So. I didn't think I needed time to feel good either, and it was amazing. So I was like, yeah, okay, I don't get the description, but I have faith.
Yeah, good.
And
good.
I've told you in a previous call, certainly reading all the posts from others and being limited to 50 words is a significant part of the whole process. So
it is, isn't it? It's both of those things are I think, just tremendous contributions to practice. Chris, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about that, how powerful it is to have access to insights from that number of people. It's extraordinary just to hear, you know, everybody's answering the same question or doing the same assignment, and goodness gracious, just things that you would never think of, or the way the spin that somebody puts on it, and suddenly, you know, light comes on.
Yes.
Good.
And it's important sometimes just to go back and read it, because it's all about what place you are the day or the moment you're reading it. And the next day you're looking going, when did they put that post here? That wasn't here yesterday. Right? It's always
that.
The solution. I don't know how you go in there and it's stuck four pages back. So that was it. I didn't want to take up a whole lot of time. I think I just want to tell you, and yes, I did start another, or am starting another 30-day retreat, and I think my big weakness is the recording and listening.
You're having trouble with that?
I think it's my technology, so it's too slow to start and too slow to get to the place to listen to them, and too slow. I mean, who's got time for, you know, 45 seconds? I mean, that's ridiculous. So
really,
I have to.
Really. Yeah, we're busy people.
So that's probably an excuse that I know I have to sort out, Sherry.
Uh-huh. 45 seconds. Yeah, well, just think of it as a little, you know, one-minute meditation, you know, that whole deal. So just kick it up to 60 seconds, and there you are.
Well, exactly. You know, you go, this is too slow. You put it down, and it was about this time when I was sort of making some notes for the call. I looked at that. That's a really dumb thing to say. I mean, it takes too long to meditate. You know, it takes too long to record something.
Yeah, it takes too long to pay attention. And, you know, that's exactly the kind of thing that I hope we get to in this class, because people just don't realize that that's, in this case, that's not you saying that. That's karmic conditioning resisting, and you happen to be there to hear it and could say, well, that's really dumb.
And that's the tricky thing that I can see your challenge and frustration in teaching others is, you can say it to yourself and you go, no, that's it. You go, nah, that's not it. And I've caught that so many times now, and certainly just in this past month trying to do the retreat, all of a sudden you can't do something. You know, I can just hear your voice saying, you can't be kind to yourself now. You don't have time for that. You know, you don't have time for a glass of water. You go, that's not very smart, is that? You know, and they're not very smart. You know what I mean, though.
Yes, I do. Yes,
so.
And increasingly in awareness practice, we're seeing that relationship. That's what is developing in people. All of that stuff that in this, I'll just say for me, that I was taught was me, was who I am. All those thoughts, all those voices, those opinions, that all of that stuff, and to begin to have that growing sense that, wait a minute, that's not actually me. I'm not saying that. I'm watching that being thought. I'm watching that being said. It's a very, very different relationship then.
Yes, and what happened was, you know, it's always said it's best to be in with a group of people, how you can't study alone, and of course the voices convince you that you can't afford, you don't need to go, and you can study alone. So you've done something amazing with the email courses, the online courses, and as a testimony, I urge people who are in that spot to take it, because you're challenged by the question, I don't need this question, what a waste of my time, but you got to put something down. And then you read the answers, and off you go, and you get drawn into it, and you start to chip away at that. You know, for me, it was obviously the automatic, where I just said, I don't hear voices, Sherry. I don't. And doing the course, I was like, oh.
Oh, those voices.
Yes. But you needed someone else to challenge you, in this case with an assignment and a deadline, and, you know, you'd read it, and then it was, the chipping away at the clay over the Buddha kind of thing.
Yeah, that's it exactly. That's what we're doing.
Yep, so
well,
thank you very much.
Well, great to hear from you, Eric. Take care.
Yep.
See you online. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Eric. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Jan. Hey, Jan.
Hi.
Hi.
There you are.
I didn't, you know, I wasn't even, it was one of those I'm not expecting to get on, and I'm so glad I did.
Good, good.
Yeah.
A little surprised.
It's the first few calls, the looking at end of life, it just, it was one of those times where it just struck me that that's where I would like my focus to be or to be more often. And I was looking at, just thinking, how do I practice with that? And hoping that sometime in the near future that we do that as a Sangha.
Yes, well, I can't remember if I've been talking about this on open air, but I think I'm just going to go on ahead and do the next email class after resistance on that. I think you were around in Sangha when we did the Celebrating Your Life.
Yes, yes.
And something along those lines, because I think it's it is such a big, such an important subject, and it's just people, there's just so much conditioning against bringing it into a regular way of looking at life, you know, with your family, with your, you know, all of your loved ones to talk about it and how do you feel about it and what would you like to have happen when you die and, you know, all of those kinds of conversations. So let's just go ahead and do a class.
Okay, let's just do it. But, you know, because what I was seeing in the previous calls as I was looking at that, it's just, it really, at least for me, in looking at it and focusing on it and staying with it, it brings up everything.
Yeah.
It just brings up everything that needs to be addressed in this
yes.
lifetime.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got an email, I guess it was day before yesterday, that someone I've known for, I don't know, many, many years, probably longer than I've known you, actually, and it's been a part of the Sangha and that sort of thing, out pruning in the yard and had a massive, the equivalent of a heart attack, and went unconscious to the hospital, had surgery, never woke up, and the family is now going to life support.
Oh,
so I mean, there it is. This is, you know, somebody
yeah.
who's vibrant and healthy and has no idea, and you know, goes out in the yard, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
again, we all know these stories, and yet we live as if it's never going to happen to us, and we don't need to make plans. We don't even really need to be present in the day that we're having because it's just another day. We have so many of these days. No?
Yeah, well, that or living in the fear that something like that's going to happen. It seems to be one or the other.
Yes, neither one resulting in actually enjoying the moment that we're living in.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And I guess what I keep coming back to is that's what I love about Zen so much is it's that we're practicing living to, hopefully, practicing living completely in
yes.
each moment so that those things that we would fear or that are inevitable, it doesn't matter in a sense because
yes.
we're ready. We're
yes.
ready.
You're ready to go and you haven't missed anything. Now, that's
right.
the other thing that I suspect so many people die with, and of course I've heard people speculate that that's what draws people back to another incarnation is the unfinished nature of it. You know, I did
right.
all of the things that I was supposed to do. I didn't do any of the things that I wanted to do. Now I want to go back and have another chance at a life that I would really enjoy. But I think the sad, again, this is speculation, just certainly not knowledge, but, you know, if there I am, you know, I've done all of the things I should do in this lifetime. Now I think I'll come back, and now I'll do all of the things that I want to do. But I have no practice in doing the things that I want to do.
Right?
Right. So my karma right. is going to draw me right back into being a person who only does all the things that I should do.
Yeah. Well, I love that we're practicing, you know, currently on what we love to do.
Yes.
And I'm going to really look forward to what, you know, whenever, it sounds like sooner than later, just focusing on that, those end-of-life issues. You know,
yes.
Just,
and, you know, Jan, the to me, the kinds of practices that we could do are things like just acknowledging, you know, I'm cooking. I'm walking in nature. I'm watching the moon, clouds move across the moon. I'm listening to the birds singing. You know, I'm really here. Am I happy? Yes. Yes, I am. I'm happy in this moment. Do I need more of these moments? I would like to have lots of them. Do I need more? No. I'm probably as satisfied as I'm ever going to be.
Because you're there with it.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, because I was just going there as you're saying. I mean, because everything's there. In that moment, everything's there.
Yes.
There's
yes.
nothing more to want or need or anything.
That's right. And if my practice is greedy, then I'll always want more. I'll never be satisfied. But if my practice is satisfaction, then I receive so much in every given day.
And every moment.
In every moment. That if yeah. this is the one, then okay. All right. I'm willing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for continuing to guide us there over and over again. And, you know, for what we're doing now and when that other part comes.
Yeah, good. Well, keep reminding me in case I, you know, slide off into forgetfulness.
Well, that'll be easy. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jan. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving along. The next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
This is Beth.
Hello, Beth.
Good evening.
What's going on?
Well, kind of appreciating how you're knitting, you know, hitting the bull between the horns.
Can you say more?
Well, I'm kind of losing my left arm.
I see.
And, you know, old age, sickness, and death, we can't get away from it. Yeah, and just the huge amounts of stuff that are coming up with it. And kind of the thing that I really wanted to look at is projection.
Uh-huh.
I get it. I understand projection on one level.
Yes. Very good. We all
know how to not
do it. One level. Yeah.
I get it that I am projecting, but it's still real.
Yes. Real is in quotes.
To be honest, it feels real.
Uh-huh. Right. I was just speaking to the acknowledging that you do know it is projection. It feels real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can turn around and look at the projection machine behind me. But as soon as I turn around, I mean, and it's like I can give you 20 instances of relationships that have fallen apart, and I know it's because I'm projecting, but it's still happening.
Uh-huh. So which is the projection part of it?
The whole thing.
Okay, so
I was trying to find when you asked me that question, it was like I was trying to find the edge of the projection, and there isn't one.
So
you know, it's panoramic.
In other words, that everything, you can see that everything about the situation is you.
Ha. I create my own life experience. Yeah,
yes,
and I had
well, you know, that's an interesting one. That's a dangerous place.
Ha, okay.
Because that gets into that new age secret stuff that I personally find a little on the creepy side. So do you
kind of getting with the control element? And
that's right. But are
then it's not my fault either.
That's right. But
which
are
is where
you
I go.
Are you interpreting it? Yes, we each interpret life circumstances through our karma. Right?
Yes.
Which is not the same as, you know, you made that plane fall on that building.
Right. Right. So if I'm not projecting, when I hear that, I can remember points when I was very strong in the practice, and it's just laughter and light and easy. But I can't remember them.
But you can't remember them?
Yeah. Not when it's serious.
And what's that like?
Like being serious?
No, what's it like?
Or that light?
Yeah, to remember that, to think about that, and then to see the juxtaposition.
I kind of immediately slow down.
Uh-huh. Does it kind of make you come to a little bit?
Yeah. But I'm also aware how deeply ingrained the projection goes. I'm real. And I'm living my life like I'm real.
Well, karma is living
karma.
Your life as if it's real.
Ha.
Okay. I think there's probably very little of you involved.
In those moments.
Well, you know, if I go along in my life and I know that there is an alternative, so say just in the simple way that we talk about it, you know, I've lived in the light room. I know what the light room is. And I continue to choose to live in the dark room. If someone were to say to me, you know, Sherry, I doubt you're making that choice. Could make a choice for your life, but don't think you are. Karmic conditioning is making those choices. And you're not doing anything about it.
Ha!
But that's
willingness
the
is the key.
Yeah, but that's not the same as you're making those choices. So we see that a lot. I mean, we watch people's lives, and it gets played out over and over and over. So the person gets talked into eating a whole plate of fudge and then is beaten up by self-hate for having done it. And the person, you know, the poor person, their only participation is being there to receive the beating. They're not making that choice. They're not. Now, it's true that there is an abandonment of the self there. And one of the things that I watch happen in life a lot is that when our circumstances get dire enough, when we've suffered enough, then very often we will decide to take charge of the choices that are being made in our lives. But until then, you know, people will just kind of go along getting talked into doing suffering kinds of things and then being beaten up for doing them and being talked into it again and being beaten up, and it just hasn't gotten bad enough that the person is going to say, enough, I don't want to do this any longer. I'm tired of suffering. I heard a rumor that freedom and joy is possible, and I want some of that.
That's when the real, you know, that's when practice really begins.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yes. Willingness is the key.
Yeah.
Here in humble submission.
Yes. And also taking a stand. So if, you know, if I know that eating that plate of fudge every morning for breakfast is the thing that's killing me, then at a certain point I have to take a stand. I have to say no. I don't. It doesn't matter what the voices say or what happens or how I feel or anything else. I know what I need to do and not do. And what I need to not do is eat that fudge. And what I need to do is make a different choice. And that's the critical turning point.
Kind of in meditation, that it's kind of a balance point between falling asleep and being completely alert.
Yes.
I tend to go to sleep.
Yes. Well, it hasn't gotten bad enough yet.
It's getting bad enough. There's not enough time left.
Well, you know, the world is full of people, and always has been, full of people who would choose, whether it's conscious or not, to go in the same direction of karma. In fact, I will tell you, are you a reader?
I have a hard time reading.
Okay. Well, if you get a chance, you might listen to these two books.
That's what I do.
Okay. So one is called The Wheel of Fortune.
The Wheel of Fortune. Okay.
The Wheel of Fortune by a woman named Susan Howich, who is a master of writing books that will tell a person what karma is like nothing else.
And at
the same time that I was reading that one, I was listening to Gone with the Wind. Okay? Which I read when I was 13. Just had a curiosity about it. It is, I would say, second on my current list of, if you want to see karma in action, watch Scarlett O'Hara destroy a perfectly good life.
Wow.
And both of those are just such, you know, it's thinly veiled. Neither author comes out and says, what I'm pointing out here is how many chances a person has to do the right thing and how many times they'll choose their karma instead.
Wow.
And so I find things interesting, and then I try to find those parallels in my life.
Again, yet again.
Yes.
Okay, so it's up to me.
It most assuredly is.
Okay. It's a beginner's path.
Yes. Yeah. And so you look and see it again. I referred you to those two novels because
stories. I understand stories.
Well, it's to see that that we're given the choice over and over and over and over. And it's only when we're identified with karma that we can be confused or think it's the right thing to do. Or anybody who's looking at us is thinking, good God, wake up, right? And we, like little homing pigeons, or more like lemmings.
Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, just head for the same thing over and over and over.
And the neurons fire that way, and the rut gets easier and easier to roll down. But if you don't use that, then the neurons disconnect.
And quite quickly, actually, much more quickly than people thought for a long time. Yeah. All right, you've got your assignment.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. What a privilege, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great, hasn't it?
Yes, and we're still alive. still have the opportunity to be here and practice. It's an incredible privilege, and I'm most grateful.
Me too. Me too. Well said.
Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.